Braves and baseball fans, it's time to take a trip from coast to coast across Major League Baseball.
There it goes, a long drive. If it stays fair, home run.
One strike away. Sandy into his windup. Here's the pitch. Swung on and missed, a perfect game.
Fly ball deep left center. Grissom on the run. Yes. The Atlanta Braves have given you a championship. Listen to this crowd.
Left side, Swanson to first. Braves, world champions.
Braves and baseball talk, straight from the diamond. Here's Grant McCauley.
And hello and welcome in to From the Diamond on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I am Grant McCauley. These are the Kia Studios, and we are wrapping up the weekend. And the Braves are down in Miami, putting the finishing touches on that. In the midst of a six-game road trip, we got a lot to talk about in that trip down to face the Marlins, a series in which I think the Braves were hoping it might be just a little bit easier than it's been the last couple of days. And we'll get into that as we go along. And, of course, there was some big news on the mound for Atlanta in the form of Spencer Strider's elbow. We'll update you on that and so many other things as we continue on with From the Diamond. Got a great show lined up for you, and I'll tell you all about it right after I tell you how you can connect with the show and with me on social media. You can find me at Grant McCauley on most platforms. You can find the show at From the Diamond on Instagram. Throw a underscore on the end of that on X. You can find it there. And the show is also on Facebook. Just search for From the Diamond. And of course, if you want to connect and hear every episode of the show, wherever you get your podcasts, you can search for From the Diamond. You can also find it on the Odyssey app and links to everything that I do. And goodness knows it's a lot because it's a very busy schedule over a course of 162 games. And then if all goes well, we get to do the whole month of October. At least that's the plan. And you can find links to everything at FromTheDiamond.com. New and improved, FromTheDiamond.com. With all of that plugging out of the way, Atlanta wrapping up its three-game series down in Miami facing the Marlins on Sunday. Some afternoon baseball down at Lone Depot Park. Braves had themselves a nice big lead early. Marlins, though, took over and were making them sweat in the late innings of this one. But, of course, I don't know that we can really bury the lead in the biggest Braves headline of this week. It wasn't a series loss to the New York Mets. It wasn't a somewhat troublesome weekend down in Miami either. It was the update on Spencer Strider's elbow. We knew it was going to cost him a lot of time, and that is, in fact, confirmed. He had a UCL brace procedure, which means that he could come back quicker than Tommy John surgery, and this is something we'll delve into a little bit more as we get This Week in Braves Baseball going. I've also got Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer, who's going to join me later to talk about just the absolute rash of pitcher injuries that has been trending really in the wrong direction for Major League Baseball for a while. What are the factors behind that? You know, what can baseball do to try to counteract some of that? Well, we're going to hear from Ben Lindbergh about that. We're also going to hear from Justin Verlander about that. He made his thoughts known as well in this past week. So lots to get into as far as that is concerned. But for the Braves, their main concern is trying to figure out how to plug that hole in their rotation, because as I've talked about on call-ins on 92.9 The Game, on the Braves postcast as part of the Locked On Sports Network, on Battery Power, and just about anywhere else writing for the Marietta Daily Journal, you cannot call up a pitcher that is going to be what Spencer Strider has been for this club. Those kind of pitchers are hard to find and hard to acquire as well, and the Braves are not really in a position at this point where anybody's going to be selling that kind of pitcher either. We'll see maybe later on in the season. So how are they going to counteract this? How are they going to fill really what was one of their most important players, fill in for him? Because I feel like, and I may have talked about this on last week's show, so forgive me if I'm kind of covering this ground again, but you know, now that we have more of a firm timeline of Spencer Strider, knowing that he's going to miss 2024, hoping that it can be back early in 2025. But either way, this season now is confirmed that they're going to be without him. I feel like there are tiers of players. I mean, everybody has a role to play. Everybody is important. But you just look at a club and you look at some players and you think, man, how are they going to win without that guy? Now, there's a great example from 2021 of how the Braves went on to win the World Series without Ronald Acuña Jr. And certainly that has not been taken away from this club by one injury, even to arguably the best pitcher in the National League. But they are going to have to figure out a way to get things done, are the Braves, without Spencer Strider, who you might recall, when we got this whole thing started back in spring training, really at Braves Fan Fest, had said, it's World Series or bust for this club. So that mission is not going to change. They're just not going to have Spencer Strider out there every fifth day. And thus, the Braves are going to be tested in a way that I'm sure they didn't want to be at any point during the season, let alone for the second consecutive April, trying to figure out, how do you fill in for one of your most important starters. Remember, Max Fried went down last year with a hamstring strain. The first of his two long stints on the disabled list, the second one, the injured list, I beg your pardon, was the forearm issue that had him, you know, miss roughly 3 months of the season. So long absence for him. Kyle Wright was also down for most of last year, and the Braves figured out how to win 104 games. So can they do it without Spencer Strider? The short answer is yes. Will it be more difficult to do it without Spencer Strider? Well, the short answer to that one is also yes. The Braves, though, they have one of the best offenses in all of baseball, and I think they're going to, once again, lean on that group to try to give them everything that it possibly can. And the Braves have needed it, and Marcell Ozuna has been a guy who has continued to bring it for this Braves club. The latest heroics for him, of course, happening on Sunday, a go-ahead three-run homer with the Braves down to their last strike against the Miami Marlins. I mean, this guy, I mean, you talk about some headlines and some everything else that's going on. We always talk about Ronald Acuña Jr., and for good reason, and we'll talk about him a bunch on this show as well. Matt Olson last year led the majors in home runs, set a Braves record, and led the league in RBI. The Braves hit 307 home runs as a club. All of this, you know, from 2023. But what was it going to look like in 2024? And one of the questions, I think, was, can Marcell Ozuna do it again? What he did last year? Because a year ago, I think I was standing in this very studio, probably about right about this time, maybe a couple weeks from now, when April was coming to a close, it was, is Marcell Ozuna going to be a Brave by the end of May? Then he went down to Miami and did the exact same kind of thing that he's done here again this year. Just to remind us, can he do it again? He can. Major League leading seventh home run of the year. It ties him with Tyler O'Neill of the Boston Red Sox. A mammoth three-run homer to center field that gives the Braves the lead in the ninth inning. So not only is he doing it this year, but he's doing it when the Braves need it most. Some clutch hitting for this club from Marcell Ozuna, leading the team in runs batted in. He's got the longest hitting streak in Major League Baseball, and all of this is a continuation of what he did for the final 5 months of 2023. This man was batting .085 at the end of April, proceeded to hit just under .300 with 38 homers and just under 100 runs batted in the final 5 months. Finished with 40 homers and 100 runs batted in last year. Gave the Braves three 40-homer hitters, and they could do that again this year. But I guess if you were wondering, is Marcell Ozuna capable of doing these kinds of things again? Let me once again tell you the short answer to that. Would also appear to be yes. And he's doing it when the Braves have really needed it, because they did not want to go down to Miami and let the Marlins take away the opportunity to take that series from them on Sunday. So Ozuna, just a really big story for the Braves. Biggest story of the offense thus far. And that's with respect to what is a great lineup for this Braves club. And Ronald Acuña Jr., you know, not necessarily off to the start that he wants to get off to. And as he's talked about that a little bit over the past week, we're starting to see him on base a little bit more, starting to see the exit velocity come up. I'm going to do a deeper dive into those stats and kind of how that correlates and what it looks like to what he was doing last season. Because if you'll recall, the home runs were not quite as plentiful as those stolen bases in April last year. Mr. Acuña is now leading Major League Baseball in stolen bases, if you're into that sort of a thing. So Major League leader in stolen bases, Major League leader in home runs, just a couple of things going right for this Braves offense thus far this year. But looking at what was a frustrating homestand before the Braves got out on the road, they didn't have a chance to play all four games against the New York Mets. One of those is postponed, and they won't play it until late September. And New York was able to grab two out of three in that shortened series. The Braves were really close in that first game. I mean, Marcell Ozuna just an eyelash away from a two-run homer in that first game that might have changed the complexion of that series as well. Just about every time you look this year, if there's a big rally going on, a key situation, key moment, it's been Marcell Ozuna who's been playing some part in that. Is it starting the rally? Is it putting the exclamation point on the rally? Is it keeping the rally going? Whatever the case is, you know, Marcell's kind of been that guy. But the Braves really took it on the chin in the Thursday day game finale. That was a game started by Allen Winans in place of Spencer Strider, the first time that the Braves had to fill that spot in rotation. And again, we're going to talk about all the challenges of that because they are many. And there is no heir apparent, really, in the minor leagues. But I do feel like Atlanta does have some options down there and some quality depth to try to make things work as best they can. But it didn't work the way they wanted it to in that finale against the New York Mets club that was really scuffling. They go down to Miami, a team that's won two games all year long coming in, and things were a bit challenging there. Now you're going to head on over to Houston, who, when this road trip began, and I'll have to look at how their weekend has gone, but They had won just four of their first 14 games, had pitching injuries galore. And, of course, with respect to small sample size theater, which we get a lot of in spring training and in the first couple of weeks, maybe first month of baseball season, you kind of have to let this thing play out over 162. I mean, the Braves, even losing to Miami on Saturday, we're still on pace to win 99 games. That's after losing two out of three to the New York Mets. So if we're doing the on-pace thing, I think the club's kind of still where it wants to be and where it needs to be. And that's winning about every two out of three games. You win a lot of series, you're going to go far over the course of the season. You keep doing it in October, you're going to end up being the last team standing. And the Braves certainly still want to do that. But we're going to get into all the things going on with the Atlanta Braves, the series down in Miami, of course. We're going to get into the pitcher injuries across Major League Baseball because goodness knows there's been too many of those. As I mentioned, I'm going to have Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer join me a little bit later in the show. We'll talk about some of the maybe factors behind that and what Major League Baseball is trying to do about it, because there's nothing fun about some of the biggest names in the sport being unable to play. And welcome back in to From the Diamond with Grant McCauley from the Kia Studios in Midtown on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Atlanta Braves put the finishing touches on a dramatic and exciting finish to their three-game series down in Miami, and it's Marcell Ozuna again. Go-ahead three-run homer with the Braves down to their final strike in the ninth inning, and he is able to give them a 9-7 victory, two out of three in that series, and a much different flight, I would imagine, than the one that they would have been having after seeing a 5-1 lead slip away in the middle frames as the Marlins proved a bit pesky for Charlie Morton and for Dylan Lee, for that matter. Well, the Braves were able to find the runs that they needed late. And once again, Marcell Ozuna was the man to provide him 3-for-5 on the day on Sunday. And again, he's got a 13-game hitting streak, 7-for-13 in the series, and a couple of tape-measure home runs, and none more important than the one that he hit on Sunday, his biggest of the year, his 7th of the season, which ties him with Tyler O'Neill for the Major League lead as well. So Marcell coming off a 40-homer season, has already put up 7 homers here in the month of April, and as we've talked about so many times, a very different story than what was developing this time a year ago when Marcell Ozuna just really couldn't seem to buy a base hit. Now he's got more base hits than anybody on the club, longest hitting streak in the majors, and some of the most important hits that the Braves have had on this young season as well. A 9-7 win for the Braves over the Marlins, and the Braves improved to 9-5 in first place in the National League East here in the early going. I don't think that surprises too many folks either. But the way you do it and the way the Braves bounce back in this series, starkly different from kind of the disappointment of losing 2 out of 3 to the Mets. And there were some rainy, gross days over at Truist Park. In one game, they weren't able to get in. One game in which their comeback came up a little bit short. But the comeback was exactly what it needed to be on Sunday. And then some. So that's how the weekend is going for the Braves as they get set to go face the Astros beginning on Monday night. But the news this week and this weekend in particular about Spencer Strider, I think it kind of puts a rain cloud over everything, just in terms of the good vibes anyway. There's none to come out of losing your best pitcher. And it's a common tale across baseball. And I'll talk to Ben Lindbergh a little bit later on in the show about what the factors are for this and how does Major League Baseball tackle trying to decrease the amount of injuries, not just to rank and file pitcher, but some of the biggest stars in baseball, biggest pitchers in baseball have been going through this a lot. And Spencer Strider is just kind of one of the latest and greatest examples of that. But with Strider, he'd already had Tommy John surgery in 2019 while attending Clemson. So he had come back from that. The Braves drafted him, brought him along, and he reached the major leagues by the end of 2021, which was his debut season in professional baseball. He was a 2020 draftee by the Atlanta Braves. Makes it all the way to the major leagues in 2021. Auditioned for a bullpen role in that postseason run. But the Braves opted to go in a different direction there. And well, Spencer Strider's show really picked up significant steam in 2022 when he set some rookie strikeout records for the Braves, finished 2nd in the Rookie of the Year Award to Michael Harris II, and then in 2023 broke the Braves' modern franchise record for strikeouts in a single season set by John Smoltz, and also was the majors' only 20-game winner. So it goes without saying, when you got those kind of credentials, those kind of accomplishments in your young career, I mean, the Braves are building their rotation both in 2024 and the future around Spencer Strider. So this, it makes you wonder. It's not to say that he can't come back and won't come back. I mean, guys go through injuries, and typically if you were to ask a pitcher what type of injury do you want to go through, an elbow injury or a shoulder injury, they're going to tell you, I'm going to go the elbow route because at least you know the path back from that. But how does this keep happening? You know, that's the conversation, a bigger conversation across baseball. But the hope is with this UCL brace procedure, which I did some research on last night because I had heard of it before, and more times than not, it seemed to be something that was more for position players and guys who didn't have to use their arm with the frequency, obviously, of a pitcher, particularly a starting pitcher who's looking to throw 100 to 110 times at maximum effort. Now, Shohei Ohtani had a UCL bracing procedure prior to the season. Lucas Giolito just had one as well of the Boston Red Sox. He signed as a free agent over the course of the winter, hurt himself in the spring. But I think at the end of 2023, there had been less than a dozen documented UCL brace procedures for pitchers, according to Fangraphs. And I'm going to do some more digging into that because it does sound low to me. But again, it's not uncommon to hear about it for position players. But I think it is obviously an option for pitchers, and particularly those who've already had the elbow ligament replaced, in a way to perhaps strengthen it and to get back a little bit faster than going through the Tommy John surgery, which has, I would say, a 14 to 16 month rehab. Some folks will tell you 18 months, and clubs are getting a little bit more cautious with how quickly they push guys back. In the old days, like the 90s and early 2000s, my guys were trying to be back in a year or so, maybe a little bit more in a year, but that was kind of the target. And it seems like that has grown a little bit more as far as the rehab time is concerned. But this bracing procedure is about 9 months to 12 months in the estimated timetable for return. So that does put Spencer Strider in play for the first half of next year, perhaps as soon as April. But we'll see how all of that plays out, obviously. The Braves aren't going to look to, you know, push it and expedite that process at the expense of Strider going through something like this again. But right now, the number one job is going to be resting, rehabbing, and getting ready to resume his career in 2025. The Braves, though, have to pick up the pieces and move past all of this. And what are they planning to do about this opening in the rotation is the question. Initially, they gave Allen Wynans that start on Thursday against the New York Mets. I'm going to tell you that's not going to be their number one plan, nor do I think it's going to be the revolving door that they had to deal with last year. They optioned Wynans back down to the minors. They brought up Darius Vines. He is a candidate to start in Houston, but I think in a bigger picture play, they're looking at getting Bryce Elder back in this mix sooner than later because he's the guy with the most experience and the best credentials if you're looking to put some continuity at the back end of that rotation. And a lot of us, myself included, thought Bryce Elder pretty much has his fifth spot in rotation to start the year based off of what he did in 2023. Now, he'd have to pitch well to keep it, but it just kind of felt like that would be the natural way that the Braves would go. What we didn't see, I think a lot of us, again, didn't see Reynaldo Lopez necessarily being a starting pitcher when he was signed because of the success he's had in the bullpen. But Lopez, to hit for his part, told the Braves he'd like the opportunity to start, and Atlanta's been open to it. And they did give him a three-year, $30 million contract, stretched him out in spring training, which is the best time to give that opportunity, quite obviously, because you have all that time to prepare. And it's, I don't even think, arguable at this point that Reynaldo Lopez has done pretty well in those first couple of outings. Now, he's also going to have to continue doing that. You know, how will his arm hold up to the starter's workload again after basically 3 years in the bullpen? Now, the Braves will continue to monitor that as well. But if they're looking to put continuity in the rotation, I feel like you've got to look at what gives you the best chance to do that. And I still think that Bryce Elder has a role to play here in 2023. Will it lead him to the All-Star game again? I'm not saying that. But if he can give them 5 to 6 quality innings, more times than not, that can help this bullpen out a lot, which has kind of had to cover a lot of innings here in the early, not even kind of. They have had to cover a lot of innings here in the early portion of the season because you lost Spencer Strider. Max Fried had a couple of short starts. Having to do that, the Allen Wynans start, I think kind of underscored by the time that they got to the end of that game and were using Luis Guillorme, whose Braves debut came on the mound. You know, those are not the ideal circumstances. It'll happen over the course of 162, but it definitely puts the onus on trying to find continuity there at the back end of the rotation, to make a long story short. It also means that Max Fried, who looks great in Miami, and I'll talk about that more in a moment, he's going to have to step up and do the things that he's capable of doing. I thought Chris Sale looked much better than his line on Saturday. I know he was charged with 5 earned runs. I heard how he described his outing. But those 7 innings, those are important for that bullpen to not get completely worn out every single series that you go through. And having 3 straight outings in which you had a starter get into the 6th inning is the start of a trend that the Braves need to see a little bit more of. Now, Charlie Morton's Sunday did not go exactly the way that he wanted it to. It wasn't really a problem with the walks, but the Marlins, they just would not go away. And they kept chipping away and chipping away and chipping away at that lead against Charlie Morton. The Braves struck first in the 2nd. Marlins answered. Braves scored 2 runs in the 3rd, 2 more in the 4th. Well, Marlins answered with 2 in the 4th. one in the fifth, three in the sixth to take the lead, and a two-run homer that was at the expense of Dylan Lee in that sixth inning. It put the Marlins on top, at least for a while, for a 7-5 score. Braves chipped one off of that lead, made it a one-run game with a run in the seventh inning, and then Marcel's three-run homer in the ninth inning gave the Braves what they needed to win. But long story short, I think with this rotation, you just need that consistency of being able to give them the innings that they need so that this bullpen will have a chance to, you know, not necessarily get overworked and overtaxed moving forward of the course of a long 162-game season. Longer term, as we look at a little bit later in the year, I know I've talked about this on past shows, but Waskar Noah, Ian Anderson, they could factor into the Braves rotation when needed. We'll see how that all plays out. Max Fried looking more like Max Fried in Miami on Friday. That's a big deal. I think we all expected him to get through a quiet first inning eventually, but that start in Philadelphia was not the one that he wanted to open the season. And his second outing against Arizona in a six-run first inning is not the kind of thing we've seen much of out of Max Fried in his time in a Braves uniform. So he was able to get through 6 1/3 innings of one-run ball on Friday, pick up a win, and Chris Sale was able to follow him up with 7 innings. There was a two-out walk in the fifth inning, a couple of calls that just really didn't go Chris Sale's way. That put the Marlins in a prime position, and they cashed in for 3 runs. So you credit the hitters for doing what they need to do, but the 7 innings pitch for Sale and the fact that they're starting to get some innings out of this rotation and with the loss of Spencer Strider is what the Braves really needed to see down in Miami. Next stop is going to be Houston. Again, Darius Vines was brought up, so I'm going to see what the Braves do with that. We'll all see what they do with it, but I do think Elder, sooner than later, whether that's the next turn through the rotation after they get home or sometime soon, that the Braves will be looking to maybe make that move and give Elder that opportunity. That's just a little bit of what's going on this week in Braves baseball. We'll talk about a lot more of it later on, including the continued success of Marcell Ozuna, one of the driving forces in the Braves lineup this season, and doing it again on Sunday. Absolutely fantastic. When we come back here, though, on From the Diamond, I'm going to be joined by a Braves legend for a really fun chat. Dale Murphy is going to check in here on the show to share the backstory of two iconic 1980s posters. You may have had them. One was called Power Alley, the other one called Stickball. They were Nike posters from the mid-80s, and I think every Braves fan should own one of these. We'll talk to Murph next. It's From the Diamond with Grant McCauley continues on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Back to Grant McCauley for more From the Diamond.
Welcome back into From the Diamond with Grant McCauley, live from the Kia Studios here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we continue on a Sunday afternoon. Braves and Marlins have wrapped things up down in Miami. Next stop for Atlanta is a trip out to Houston for a 2021 World Series rematch with the Houston Astros. We'll be talking all about that as the show continues, but we're going to turn back the clock to the 1980s, 1985 to be precise. And if you grew up a TBS kid watching the Atlanta Braves during that decade, you probably know a thing or two about my next guest, and you may have had the posters we're about to talk about on your wall growing up. I'm thrilled to welcome Braves great Dale Murphy into the show right now. Murph, it's always great to catch up with you. I always appreciate the time and the conversations, and today I'm kind of excited to have one that maybe a lot of folks haven't heard before because we get to revisit, I think, a time in Braves history, a time in your career that a lot of people probably remember quite vividly in the form of not one, but two amazing posters.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. Back in the 80s, Nike had the poster thing going. It was a big deal, and I got to do two of them. So, you know, I love to share the stories. And like I say, it was such an honor back then, you know, to have them approach you and say, hey, we want to do a poster. And I was really lucky and had a lot of fun doing both of them.
Well, absolutely. And so let's kind of dive in there because I've always been a little bit curious. I mean, I know some of this story, but for those listening out there, they may have seen the Power Alley poster and thought, hey, either I had that as a kid or I always wanted that when I was a kid. I needed to be on my wall. There's a generation of Braves fans anyway that grew up with this iconic poster from Nike. It's got you in that dark alley, like perfectly lit there, clad in those powder blue Braves uniform and holding a bat that is glowing like a lightsaber. So we'll get into how they pulled off all the effects in a moment. But who originally approached you with this idea and how did the concept of Power Alley kind of all come together?
You know, I'm not sure who reached me. I know as far as the shoe representative, the guy that visited all the clubs was Bill Frischette. And he's kind of a legendary guy with Nike. You know, he was there at the beginning when shoes got to be a big deal. Now, Basketball shoes were obviously the driving force in running shoes. And I can remember I was talking to Bill with Nike. And I was, you know, from Portland, Oregon, and I was excited to be a Nike guy. So when I first started wearing Nikes, you know, I wore them for a couple of years, and I had some really good years, and they would give us a few thousand dollars worth of merchandise. And finally, I said, hey, Bill, how about sweeten the pot a little bit? You know, I think I, you know, maybe worth a little bit more merchandise anyway. You know, they weren't giving us cash. And he said, well, Murph, you know what? We don't sell many baseball shoes. We sell basketball shoes. Uh-huh. And that was, you know, in the day, obviously, when I don't even know if kids could go buy Nike baseball shoes then. They were just getting started. And now you can obviously get Nike baseball shoes. But that is part of their business. But their big business, obviously, is sneakers and basketball shoes. And so Bill probably pulled me aside, you know, in spring training and said, hey, we're going to do a poster of you, and some people will be in mm-hmm. touch. And then they just set up a time, and I met the guys from Nike. And I wish I could remember the names of the photographers and the designers and the idea guys. You know, it's interesting, a few years ago, probably about 10 years ago, Nike invited Nancy and I back to their campus there in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And we got to talk to some of the artists that create their shoes, and they wanted me to talk about Power Alley.
Wow.
And stickball. So that was a real thrill. And there was still someone there that remembers, you know, the conversation. He wasn't at the shoot, at the photo shoot, but he remembers, you know, Nike get in touch with me and then coming to spring training and doing the photo shoot.
Chatting with former Braves great Dale Murphy here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. He joins me on the WadeFord.com hotline. You mentioned stickball. We're going to get to that a little bit later, because Power Alley was just one of the two posters, and the story for each, I think, is super fun. But as far as Power Alley, you arrive at the photo shoot. Where exactly was that? How did they set up this concept? And ultimately, I guess we all want to know, how did they get you that glowing bat? Because as a kid, it was like different parts of my imagination were coming together, because there's Dale Murphy. Does he know Luke Skywalker? How did this all work out?
Yeah. Well, they came to me, and I have in my possession the storyboard. Well, the artist's rendition of what they were trying to do.
Wow.
Kind of just a really quick sketch of, you know, the idea of Power Alley is a baseball term. And they got there a couple of days early, came over and picked me up at the Braves clubhouse in West Palm Beach and said, so Power Alley is a term, you know, baseball term. We're going to mm-hmm. riff on that phrase. You know, Power Alleys are the gaps to left center and right center. And so what we've done, and they were telling me this, and here's the picture of the concept. We're going to get you in an alley, and we're going to powerize this alley. So, and it was all real. None of it is done on a computer. It was actually an alley, a dimly lit alley in downtown West Palm Beach that they found. I would love to remember where that is and
right.
go see it again. So they, you know, I just drove over, they gave me the address, and well, first of all, back up, you know, so they go, Murph, we want you to wear your baby blue jersey. And John Holland had already packed up all the game jerseys. This was late in spring training. The game uniforms
right.
that we only used a couple times in spring training. Usually we wore something that was just for spring training. They were back in Atlanta. So they go, well, we need a number 3 baby blue uni. So they ran over to the Richmond clubhouse, and that's why it doesn't say Atlanta on it. That's why it says Braves.
Wow.
Because it's actually a Richmond Braves jersey. So it said Braves. So it's actually not my jersey. It's a Richmond Braves number 3 powder blue uni. I did have some pants that we wore. We just wore a different jersey for spring training, but I wore my game pants. Oh, and they had a new shoe. If you look at the shoe in Power Alley, it's a white plastic cleat they thought might work better on AstroTurf. So we want you to wear this kind of a plasticized cleat. We're going to stand you in this alley. We're going to light it kind of, you know, kind of dimly, but we're going to powerize it with this bat. And it was literally a yellow wiffle ball bat that they had inserted a fluorescent light bulb.
Huh.
So it was, the wire was coming out, but they didn't want it to show. So they ran it up my sleeve and down the back of my shirt, down the back of my pants. And if you look closely at the bats sitting there in the alley, you can see a little bit of the wire. The wire goes along the bats, and the wire goes up the wall, and they plugged it in to an outlet that they found in this little warehouse. And so they give me this bat, they wet it down, and I'm standing in water, and they go, okay, Murph, we're going to plug this thing in. And I could tell an electrician had not done this. But then they took the picture. It wasn't Photoshop, but you could tell they touched up the photo a little bit to make it glow a little bit more. But for the photo, it was actually a glowing yellow wiffle ball bat, and they didn't want me to smile, so I'm looking kind of tough. And that's how the phrase, like you said, this glowing bat in Star Wars was popular. So a lot of people would call it the lightsaber poster. But it was really nothing to do with that, but just somehow trying to make this alley look powerized and doing kind of a riff on that phrase in baseball, Power Alley. So I thought I was going to get electrocuted, but I survived the shoot. And it was just a great moment.
And not only did you survive the moment, but a lot of posters got sold from that particular photo shoot over the years. And I think if they were to re-release that, they would sell even more posters. And maybe we can touch on that in a minute. But you've shared a lot about Power Alley as we chat with Dale Murphy here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on 92.9 The Game, because I think it's one that so many people remember. But I was always fascinated by the stickball poster. It featured you and Doc Gooden out in the street going one-on-one in that classic kids game. When did this idea get pitched to you? And what was it like shooting that one alongside Dwight Gooden, who was at the height of his popularity at that time as well?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I was really lucky to do the Power Alley poster, but I just love the whole concept of stickball. So it was a couple months before the All-Star break. Nike called me and did most of the talking to my agent, Bruce Church. And they said, hey, we've got an idea. And, of course, you know, they were getting bigger. And this was 85, the summer of 85. They were, of course, doing really well, selling a lot of shoes and wanted to get into the apparel, which they had already started, but there was really nothing like a baseball apparel line. Mm-hmm. So they had this idea. It was really a marketing. The poster ended up being a great poster on itself, but it was the start of a line of clothing that Nike wanted to do, and they asked for me and Doc Gooden to be the representatives of it, and that line was going to be called Stickball. And so I was wearing a mock-up. They're up in my restaurant there at Murph's in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. It was a mock-up of a shoe that looked like a baseball shoe, but it was a tennis shoe. And then I'm wearing sleeves, and I got this little stickball logo on it. I think there's a 3 on mine. And then Doc is wearing some shorts and a sleeve too. And so the start of that was going to be the rollout of this new line of clothing. I guess the best way to put it is baseball-centric clothing. And Doc and I were going to be the face in baseball of this new line that they were going to open up, and they never did. It never happened. But the photo shoot, like I said, a couple months before, they said, hey, we think this will work. Doc and I were both at the All-Star game in 85 in Minnesota, and we, the Braves, played in New York right after the All-Star break. So they said, after the All-Star game, go to New York, you got a day off before you start the season again. And sure enough, we went over to this district. What they told me, and people have said, yeah, that's probably where it is. It was over in Brooklyn. They just had a great street, took some chalk and made a home plate and put a strike zone up. And they had these rubber balls that kids play stickball with. And they said, okay, and here's a big broom handle, you know, sawed off, and we want you to stand in the box, and Doc's gonna only about 30 feet away. I was like, well, I have no chance hitting Doc when he was 60 feet away. And they said, okay, you know, just, you know, let's shoot and see what happens. And it was fun. You can still, one of the World Trade Centers is in the background, and there's a dog just sitting out there in the middle of the street you can barely see. And I've had a number of people that have gone to that location because you got the Brooklyn Bridge, I think, is in the background, but right, we're right under the Manhattan Bridge, which this district is called the Dumbo, the district under the Manhattan Bridge overpass. So it's just right under that bridge, a bunch of warehouses. Now I think it's a bunch of condos, but I really like that one just to share it with Doc. And I just think that concept of playing stickball really turned out really well. It's that favorite is probably the first one, but You know, if I were to choose one to hang up in my house, I love the feeling of that stickball one.
Yeah, and what a great time to be able to share that with somebody else who was also, at that point, as far as baseball was concerned. You know, if there was a short list of names who really captured the imagination of fans across the country, you were on that list. Dwight Gooden was certainly on that list as well. And these posters were part of a rather fun marketing campaign for Nike for a number of years, featuring some of its baseball athletes. I know there were a bunch of these, but I think that you got two of the absolute most memorable of that bunch with Power Alley and with Stickball. As we wrap up there, I know you mentioned the potential for there being an apparel line. I love that number 3 Dale Murphy logo that they have on that shirt and on the shoes as well. Maybe at some point you can figure out a way to utilize that in the future. But I guess that kind of brings me to this question is, for a long time, these weren't really re-released or licensed back out. But in recent years, you've been able to do a little bit of something with the Power Alley poster in particular, haven't you?
Yeah, I thought the same thing you mentioned earlier that, you know, if they re-released them, it would be so fun for people that had them back in the day to buy them, and maybe kids would too. And it just, you know, it keeps popping up. And we talked to them. I said, you know, can we use these images? And they were pretty much like, yeah, go ahead. I put something out with it every once in a while. And, you know, especially the Power Alley poster. And you know, it's just kind of sitting there. And I talked to them about it. And, you know, I agree with you. I think people would love to buy it. But, you know, the other thing is maybe they could do it in a different format than a 2-foot by 3-foot poster. But these companies are all about looking forward, and I think the thing is they don't want to get too hung up on their nostalgia. But I agree with you. I think, you know, all things 80s now are pretty popular. That baby blue is pretty popular. And so I think it's a fun idea to keep putting some things out there from back in the day.
Well, Murph, I appreciate your time as always. Loved going down memory lane to hear these stories. I look forward to seeing you at Truist Park very soon.
Absolutely, Grant. Thank you.
When we continue, I'm going to have Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer join me to talk about these pitcher injuries that all of Major League Baseball is trying to come to grips with. How are they going to handle it? I'll ask Ben all about that. I'm From the Diamond with Grant McCauley, coming your way next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92 on Sports Radio 9 The Game, live from the Kia Studios here on a Sunday late afternoon. As the Braves and Marlins wrapped up their series in Miami, we turn our attention to things going on across the baseball world. And unfortunately, one of the big stories, and we know it all too well here around Atlanta, is injuries to pitchers, particularly of the elbow. And Spencer Strider finds his name on that list this year as well. To help me talk about this rash of injuries, I've got Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer joining me right here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley. You can find his writing about baseball and so many other things on The Ringer. He's also the host of the Effectively Wild podcast over at Fangraphs. And you can follow him on social media at Ben Lindbergh, all one word. Well, Ben, great to talk to you. Unfortunately, what we're going to be talking about is not really great for anybody. The players, the teams, the fans, all of that, because we're seeing another rise in pitcher injuries, particularly elbow issues here in 2024. Some of the biggest names in baseball already on the IL this season. This isn't necessarily new, but it's certainly an alarming uptick in what has been a very troubling trend for pitchers, to say the least.
Yes, it's a long-term trend, and there have been various flare-ups before where people have called this an epidemic going back a decade or so.
Yeah.
But sometimes we get a flurry, a cluster of them all at once, and we remember, oh, right, this is actually a really big problem. And also, I think it's affecting very prominent pitchers this time, so it's not necessarily just the quantity, but also the quality. We're seeing aces go down. We're seeing guys whose teams' seasons hinge on, right? And it does feel increasingly like the season's just hanging on the balance, and it all depends on that ligament, which really is just not quite up to the strain of throwing major league pitches as hard as they're being thrown these days.
Yeah, I think cluster might be a great way to refer to all of this in just a general sense, but we know here in Atlanta, we'll talk about Spencer Strider a little bit later, just how big some of these injuries can be in terms of the impact and what they can do to a team's plans, especially when you're a team whose plans, according to Spencer Strider, were to win the World Series this year. Now, you wrote a lengthy piece about this injury epidemic. We can still call it that, most certainly. MLB's next order of business, saving pitchers? I think it seems like a pretty worthwhile endeavor, but how do they go about doing this? Because it sounds like a pretty complicated process from what you laid out. So let me start by asking kind of an obvious question that I think a lot of fans may be wondering and may only be part of the equation, but what effect, if any, do you think the pitch clock and the pace of play had on the rise of elbow issues in particular?
Personally, I think it's small. I think it's a subject that deserves further study. And as we get a greater sample of major league seasons with the pitch clock, then we'll have more data and we'll be able to draw firmer conclusions. But as we were saying, this is a longstanding problem. This is something that predated the pitch clock in the majors and even in the minors for that matter, right? So I don't think we can pin it all on the pitch clock. It's possible that the pitch clock has slightly exacerbated the issue. It stands to reason. I mean, it makes a sort of logical sense that if you're giving guys less time to recover between pitches, maybe that adds to their fatigue. You start changing your arm angle. Your muscles aren't compensating as well for the strain that you incur during a pitch. And so more of that strain gets transferred to the ligament. It does sort of make sense on the surface. But again, this is such a longstanding problem. And Spencer Strider, right? This is his second procedure. I mean, he had Tommy John surgery in 2019 at Clemson, right? So I don't think we can pin it all on the pitch clock, though I understand why. Well, we got a pitch clock last season. We have all these injuries now. People are kind of raising the alarm. But the studies that have been done to try to correlate how much pitchers' pace picked up and whether that really connects to whether they got hurt or not have so far been inconclusive or have failed to show any direct connection there. But, you know, if it were a case where we had no idea what was happening or what other causes might be at play here, then I might be inclined to say, yeah, worry more about the pitch clock. But this is not necessarily a mystery why this is happening. There are a lot of contributing causes here.
No, there certainly are. And when you think about changes that have been made to pitchers, not just for pace of play, but in recent years, the substances that they're allowed to use to affect the baseball, because we saw the incredible rise in spin rate. And I think it got to the point where, I hate to keep using the word alarming, but folks were looking at this and thinking, okay, well, maybe we have gone a little bit too far. And now Major League Baseball reined all of that back. I've read a lot of pieces, your article included, over the years and just this year as well, about how that might have affected what pitchers are able to do. And I know Tyler Glasnow said that with the severe restrictions on what they're able to use, and of course, we're not talking about spider tack and some of the things that probably never should have been brought through the door to begin with, he felt different with how he had to grip the baseball and how his arm was recovering between starts. So I think people are noticing all kinds of different little aspects that may play at least some role in what's going on. But at the bottom of all of this, or kind of the bottom line of all of it, is throwing and the motion to do that as hard as pitchers are doing it these days, that's unnatural in and of itself. So like you said, I mean, there's a lot to study, a lot to parse through here as they try to gather this data.
Yeah, we have velocity data now going back 15, 20 years, and it's striking just how steep the increase has been. I mean, we see it. We don't bat an eye at guys throwing high 90s anymore. I mean, that used to be the outliers, and now it's near the norms. So that's going to take its toll. I mean, all the studies have shown that the harder you throw, the more strain that ligament is incurring, and it just can't stand up to it once you repeat that motion enough. And it's just max effort all the time, right? And that seems to be the biggest risk factor, is not just whether you throw hard or not, but whether you're throwing at the top of your personal range, whatever that might be. You might be a hard thrower, you might not be, but if you're maxing out on almost every pitch, that really takes a toll. And that's what you hear from pitchers, you know, from earlier eras who said, I used to pace myself, right? I was supposed to go deep into the game and I had to save something. I had to take something off. And then maybe a big plate appearance, you reach back for a little extra. Now there's no extra. It's just maximum, you know, dials in the red constantly because you're not expected to go that deep into the game. You know, it's just, hey, go five, give us five innings. That's all we want. And so you're just throttling up from the get-go, right? And relievers, same thing. You're coming in for your one inning at a time. You're not going to leave anything on the table there. You're going to be throwing as hard as you possibly can. And even though we have lowered the workload in terms of pitches thrown and innings thrown, each individual pitch now is costing so much more effort that I think that is really the core cause. And that's unfortunate because it's hard to solve that. You know, if it were just the pitch clock, if it were just the sticky stuff, we could say, okay, let's roll back whatever we changed. It's sort of simple. But this goes deeper, and it starts not just in the majors, not just in pro ball, but in amateur ball, because guys want to get seen. They need to throw as hard as they can at showcases and travel ball so that scouts will see them, so that they'll get drafted and signed. And that's why we're seeing more and more of these procedures happen even at early ages.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was going to go. Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer joins me on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. He joins me on the WadeFord.com hotline. I guess the question and your piece, obviously, is what can Major League Baseball do to address this? You wrote an extensive study is where it all starts, but I feel like we may end up in familiar territory. Some of the things you just mentioned when it comes to answers and reasons and factors, because the overuse of young arms is certainly one. More pitchers than ever going, you know, max velocity, throwing harder than ever seems to be a baseline for a lot of these injuries. But, you know, you talk to people, a lot of folks, for your piece in The Ringer, and when it comes to tangible solutions, I mean, how difficult will it be to find and implement things that could make a positive impact when we are talking about, if we had the time machine, we're not going back 10 years. We'd probably be wanting to go back about four decades to get to the root of this.
Yeah, it's tough. And even if you implement some solution at the majors that then sort of trickles down, it might be a generation of pitchers for that to really take effect. So it's not an overnight solution, whatever you try. There are a lot of off-the-wall ideas out there. You know, why don't we implement a speed limit and you throw above a certain miles per hour and it's an automatic ball, right? And, you know, you could come up with all sorts of restrictions or incentives for how deep the starter has to go into games. My personal solution, my favored way to treat this, is to continue to lower the limit of pitchers on the active roster, which might seem sort of counterintuitive. Wait, you want to restrict the number of pitches you could use and make each pitcher throw more? Yeah, I think that's what we need to go back to, because when that was the case, when starters went deep into games, as I said, they had to pace themselves, right? They had to throw less than max effort all the time. So MLB a couple of years ago put a 13 pitcher limit in place. That's just not enough. You know, it needs to go to 12. It needs to go to 11. They need to close the loopholes when it comes to using guys on the AAA shuttle, just shuffling on and off the roster. And I think that might pay a few dividends. A, it might encourage pitchers to pace themselves. B, you get the starter going deeper into games, which from an entertainment perspective, I think a lot of fans appreciate when it's not just a parade of pitchers the entire game. C, maybe you get lower strikeout rates, which has also been a bit of a problem with baseball, just because pitchers won't be maxing out on every pitch. And that way, you know, there's some strategy. You'd have to decide, how deep do I want my starter to go into games? I only have this many pitchers on the roster. We've got another game tomorrow, right? So there's a lot of interesting decisions to analyze. And if pitchers then have to condition themselves to go deeper into games, well, then minor league pitchers are going to have to train with that in mind. And amateur pitchers, if you're scouting someone, you're not just going to go for the guy who throws the hardest. You're also going to go for the guy who's shown some durability. So I think that would pay dividends. Again, not overnight, not snap your fingers and the problem is solved. But that to me is the most elegant solution that doesn't require something heavy-handed, like you can only throw this hard, right? Or you can only use this many pitchers in a single game. But as you said, MLB is studying this. Last October, they launched a study. They've done more than 100 interviews with pitching experts at all levels of all kinds, and they've been gathering information, and sometime soon we'll transition to a task force that will make some real recommendations about how to address this problem.
Gotta love a task force, and Major League Baseball certainly had a few of those in recent years. Chatting with Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. You brought up a lot of different things there. I wish we had way more time than we have. I would just like to throw out there, I consider myself a bit of an old soul when it comes to baseball. Like, I liked the complete game. I kind of hate that it went away. I think a lot of people feel that way, and the same for the stolen base. So some of the changes Major League Baseball brought to bring the running game back, and we saw it with Ronald Acuña Jr. here in Atlanta last year. That's an exciting aspect of the game. I wouldn't mind seeing the starting pitcher out there to start the ninth a few times a year. I'm not saying we have to go back to 300-plus innings in the way that things were when the Nolan Ryans and Steve Carltons and, you know, Phil Niekros here in Atlanta were really, you know, pushing the limits of what durability probably is for a pitcher. But to your point, we brought up a whole generation now of minor league pitchers that pretty much max out around 120 to 140 innings pitched. How are they ever going to throw 200-plus innings year after year in the majors as starters? And that's not even to talk about what's been going on in Major League bullpens with the max velocity that we've seen in the past 20 or so years as well. Speaking of max velocity, my transition here, as eloquent as I can make it, on Saturday, the Braves released their course of treatment for Spencer Strider's elbow injury that he suffered in his second outing of the year. He has undergone a UCL brace procedure rather than a second Tommy John surgery. This could allow him to return much sooner in 2025. That's the upshot. Of course, the concern, obviously, is the troublesome nature of the UCL itself. You talked about this a little bit earlier. You went into great detail, though, in your article about how challenging it is to deal with this. Could you share some of those numbers with us? Because we thought Tommy John surgery was reaching critical mass maybe 15 or so years ago, but those UCL procedures now are happening in even greater numbers.
Yes, that graph, the bar chart just keeps climbing and climbing and climbing. And it's not just major league pitchers, it's minor league pitchers, it's amateur pitchers. Mm-hmm. You know, guys are getting drafted now very often with some sort of UCL reconstruction already in their past. And partly that is a testament to how effective the surgery is, right? Which is the good news. And even though we haven't figured out how to prevent these injuries, we have improved our treatment. And so the internal brace repair that Spencer Strider is having kind of halves the recovery time, which is great. If all goes well, then hopefully he'll be back at full strength in 2025 instead of maybe later next season. Mm-hmm. But we have seen just the injured list placements, the injured list days, they keep climbing. Part of it was maybe the effect of the pandemic and the shortened season and the lack of a minor league season and having to ramp up after that. But we've seen it continue to increase and climb. And when you hear the doctors who do these surgeries, they say the same thing. You know, I'm doing more of these than I ever did. They're not even lasting as long. It used to be that you have a Tommy John and you're good for a while after that. You know, you've got a new, fresh, strong ligament. Mm-hmm. Now you can't count on the new, fresh, strong ligament lasting even that long. You might be back under the knife in 3 to 5 years, right? So there are no guarantees. And I'm with you on the starting pitcher as protagonist in a given game. I think it's great to see guys go head to head and you're tracking the pitch count and you're thinking, how much does he have left? And can he make adjustments each time through the lineup as opposed to just, well, five and dive, he's done. Now it's time for the reliever carousel. But also, I think in a broader sense across games, I mean, when Gerrit Cole got hurt earlier this year, people looked around and said, who's the best pitcher in baseball these days? A lot of people landed on Spencer Strider. Yeah. Well, now Spencer Strider is down. Now we play that game again. Well, who's still standing? You know, there's so few Cy Young winners who are even active right now because so many guys are on the shelf. And you look around and we love just fixating on position players and gosh, they hit the ball so hard and they run so fast. And with pitchers, it's almost a cautionary sign when you see someone throwing super hard, you think, uh-oh, he's going to break. You know, it makes you less excited paradoxically about his career. So you want to be able to count on these guys. You want to be able to enjoy their careers and look forward to them and follow them as prospects and say, he's going to have a long, great, mm-hmm. distinguished career. And I'm going to be able to watch him for 15, 20 years. And now you just never know, right? It just could all go poof at any moment.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no predicting when exactly it can happen. But as we've pointed out in this conversation, it certainly seems to be more of a when than an if for a lot of baseball's best pitchers. Ben Lindbergh, I really enjoyed it as always. Always appreciate your time. Let the folks know where they can see your writing. And of course, tell them about the podcast as well.
Yep, they can find all my writing on baseball and other subjects at The Ringer. And you can find my baseball podcast, Effectively Wild, at Fangraphs and all the other usual podcast places.
Well, one of my regular listens as well, and I've always enjoyed jumping on talking Braves with you each and every year as well. And I look forward to talking baseball at some point very soon with you. Ben, thanks for all your time. I appreciate it.
Of course. Great to talk to you, Grant.
When we come back, we will continue talking about the Atlanta Braves and their current road trip. Next stop, 3 games against the Houston Astros for a World Series rematch. We'll get into all of that next right here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I love baseball.
Now back to more Grant McCauley and From the Diamond on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back into From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. As we put the finishing touches on this week's show, the Braves put the finishing touches on a series win down in Miami, courtesy of Marcell Ozuna. That man again, down against his old club in South Beach, just seems to enjoy hitting at Lone Depot Park. It's like he never left, but a lot has changed since Marcell Ozuna left Miami. And A lot changed when he went back to Miami last year, and just flashbacks, I'm sure, for the Marlins as he came through time and again for the Braves with a big series, 7 out of 13. The go-ahead three-run homer on Sunday and continues what has been a great start to the 2024 campaign for him. Braves winning 2 out of 3 down to Miami when it looked like they might be staring a series loss in the face. They were down to their last strike, after all. We'll now jet off to Houston to face the Astros. A little rematch of that 2021 World Series matchup between these two clubs. Always fun to kind of relive those days. The Braves, though, would like to kind of relive it in October a little bit more than the couple of times we've seen them during the season. But what Ozuna has done early in the year, it has been one of the big stories for the Braves offense. In fact, it has been the biggest story of the Atlanta Braves offense. He's now tied for the major league lead with 7 home runs. Has the longest hitting streak in the majors right now, active at 13 games to start the season. He's the only Brave to have hit. And, well, he's hitting 13 of 14, I guess. So one game he did not hit in, but Ozuna finding his way on base far more times than not. And we talked a little bit about him in the early going of the season and how good it is to see him carrying over what he did from a year ago when he hit 270 with 40 homers and 100 runs batted in. But when we talked a little bit about Ronald Acuna Jr. earlier, I said I'd get back to this, and obviously his start has not been quite the same as he was a season ago. Acuna, as of the end of the series against the Marlins, a 2-for-4 day for Ronald Acuna Jr. with a walk, also stole a base, knocked in a run, scored a couple of runs, up to 273, and has the OPS up over 700 again, which may sound like a place where Ronald Acuna Jr.'s OPS would never fall below that. But the extra base hits have been a little harder to come by, though we're starting to see some doubles. And I think we're starting to see reasons why, which I'll get into in a moment. But still waiting on that first home run of the year for Ronald Acuna Jr. 14 games now into the season, and we've yet to see our first Acuna home run. I predict that sooner than later that is going to change. And as we've seen with Ronald in the past, and he showed it last year, not really a fast starter in terms of home runs, but the overall approach at the plate last year was just so far and away, just above and beyond anything you could have possibly ever expected from him, that, you know, he's hitting the ball hard. It was just a matter of making a little bit of an adjustment. And that's what I want to get to, because Acuna really is showing those signs right now of shaking off that slow start. He was not making very hard contact that first probably 8 to 10 games of the year. I went and looked at his StatCast page, and I talked about this on 92.9 The Game a little bit earlier this week. But if you go look at the 2023 metrics there, you will see Acuna in the 90th or better percentile in virtually everything that matters for a hitter. I mean, that's how good he was. And the consistent hard contact, this guy was squaring the ball up more than some entire teams a year ago. That's how just locked in Ronald Acuna Jr. was. But when you looked at the first week or so, week and a half of 2024, it was kind of the opposite end of the spectrum. There was a lot of blue on that chart, a lot of 20th percentile, maybe a couple that had creeped into the middle. And I want to say he went a week before he barreled the baseball up. And that was just a strange thing to see. And it might be a product of missing some time in spring training. In fact, it probably was. Not really as many at-bats as he would have liked to have had, but I think we're starting to see that Ronald is feeling a little bit more like himself. The launch angle, we're starting to see some balls getting driven to the outfield, some doubles, and also the exit velocity is starting to reach those Ronald Acuna Jr. levels again, 100-plus miles an hour multiple times per game. Just needed to see some of that stuff. And I do think once he adjusts that launch angle, I mean, that is going to be the path towards getting right back on the track that he was on in 2023. And the stolen bases are there. He's leading the majors with 7 steals thus far on the young season. So you know he's feeling healthy. And he joked in the homestand in the win over the Mets in the opener of that series, I believe, that was, hey, we just needed to get on base. And then I'm able to start stealing again and feeling a little bit more like myself. And I think he will. One thing that also jumped off the page, in addition to the lack of hard contact for Ronald Acuna Jr. that I was looking at, and it kind of took place over about a 5 or 6 game sample size, of 6 games actually, he struck out 12 times in 6 games. He's only struck out twice now in the last 7 games, but just 10 multi-strikeout games in 2023, he had 5 of those in that 6-game span that I just brought up. So it just seemed like an adjustment needed to be made, and it looks like that adjustment has been made, and I would expect Ronald Acuna Jr. to start doing those Ronald Acuna Jr.-type things again soon. I want to talk a little bit about Travis d'Arnaud, and you might have seen on social media if you're following me on X or on Instagram, at Grant McCauley is where you can find me. I wrote an article in the Merida Daily Journal this week because I had a chance to talk to some of Travis d'Arnaud's teammates, And these guys, you may not be surprised by this, hold Travis d'Arnaud in the highest possible regard. So we're going to listen to a little bit of audio from some conversations that I had with some of the Atlanta Braves that have been around long enough, played with Travis d'Arnaud long enough to where you can just understand that there's a relationship building that goes on in the team chemistry that is one of the reasons that the Braves are who they are. Let's hear a little bit from Matt Olson, the Braves first baseman, who I caught up with first. I had talked to Brian Snitker before the game, and he described Travis d'Arnaud in one word. He said, he is irreplaceable. And then he went on to tell me the reasons why. And I know how difficult it was for the Braves to try to replace him in 2021 on the road to the World Series. And that just kind of made me wonder, well, when you look around this Braves clubhouse, there's a universal respect for Travis d'Arnaud. What goes into that? Here's a little bit of my conversation with Matt Olson as to what exactly Travis d'Arnaud means to the Atlanta Braves at large.
When it comes to, I guess, the overall dynamic of what you guys have built here, how big of a piece of this clubhouse and this team chemistry is Travis?
He's huge. Talk about somebody who's the same guy every day. Just keeps a chill, low demeanor, knows how to do his work, and keeps it light. He's great in here.
How much does that influence kind of sink in with other guys, particularly young players, maybe pitchers who are working to acclimate themselves to the big leagues or just get through tough situations that the game throws at them as well?
Yeah, I think everywhere in the game people look to veteran guys and see how they act and how they handle themselves. And to have a guy who's got 10 years in the big leagues as a catcher, so he works at both sides, pitchers and hitters, to be the kind of veteran that he is big for a clubhouse.
I know you're not making his plans for his post-career, and he's not looking to call it a career anytime soon, but is he the kind of guy that you look at and you just think, I could see that guy managing a club or staying around the game and in a capacity for a long time?
Yeah, he's definitely got the demeanor for it. He's a lot like Snit, like laid back, and knows how to handle personalities and different guys. And I think if it's something he wanted to get into, he could for sure.
No, we haven't really had those conversations necessarily in depth with Travis d'Arnaud. And again, he's in the midst of his playing career. The Braves have extended his contract twice to keep him around this club. And right now he's playing a very important role because he is pretty much the everyday catcher with Sean Murphy sidelined after straining that oblique to start the season. The Braves are in, a place that a lot of clubs would envy to have a Sean Murphy and a Travis d'Arnaud that they can call upon. But d'Arnaud's leadership beginning in 2020 when he joined the club on his initial two-year contract, I think, has been felt all throughout his tenure as an Atlanta Brave. And in 2021, when he was injured and out for about 3 months, the Braves basically had an open audition, a casting call behind home plate. They went through six different catchers trying to figure out a way to handle all of that. And A.J. Minter, a Braves reliever who I think has become one of the most important arms on this team, he talked a little bit about his relationship with Travis d'Arnaud and the impact that Travis has had on his career. Here's my conversation with A.J. Minter.
You've played with Travis d'Arnaud now for, what, fifth year he's been here? When it comes to what you guys have created here in this clubhouse and how important it is to, have that togetherness in here and out there, what role does he play and just how important has he been in his time here?
I've said it before, but I firmly believe we don't win the World Series without Travis d'Arnaud when he was especially the bullpen, obviously starting pitching, is so in tune with each individual pitcher that he knows each person's strengths, where to set up, where their misses, and he's just able to work off of it. And he's able to read hitters. I hardly ever shake off d'Arnaud just because I know I trust him. We're always on the same page, and what he's just able to do, he just builds that trust when he's behind the plate, and it goes a long way, especially as a pitcher. So, it's just been special just to be a part of, and I felt like I struggled, in 2019, 2020. It was kind of my rebound year, did good, and ever since, I had that little hiccup in 21, but ever since then, Travis's been a big part of the reason, kind of my turnaround, personally for me. I'm just appreciative. I feel like he's able to show me, stick with your fastball. Always stick to your strengths. Never go off. The hitter's weaknesses. Always stick to what you're good at. So he does a good job of it.
I asked Matt Olson just a minute ago. I know you're not making any plans for Travis to call it a career anytime soon, but when you kind of look at that guy, the relationship building, the trust you talk about, and you think about somebody who can stay around the game for a long time after his playing days are done, he seems to check an awful lot of boxes.
Yeah, he's very, very smart as far as, you know, I hope he does become a manager one day because I feel like he could really do a really good job, and I think he will stay, you know, in baseball. And yeah, I'm just hoping he'll stay along as round as a player for a lot longer. But yeah, just trying to enjoy, soak up everything with him and trying to keep learning.
Now, the Braves have certainly enjoyed their time with Travis d'Arnaud, who's been a big part of their success during his now 5 years with this Atlanta Braves club. Just wanted to share some of those conversations and, you know, how exactly this clubhouse is so tight-knit and how that affects, you know, what they do on the field. A lot of it comes from, you know, how they prepare off the field, before the games, after the games, all of those things, because over the course of a baseball season, they're going to be seeing each other a lot more than they're going to be seeing their families. That's just kind of the way that whole thing goes. So when you can have that dynamic at play in that clubhouse, it just means an awful lot. And Travis d'Arnaud certainly means an awful lot to the Atlanta Braves. Upcoming for Atlanta, as I mentioned, Houston on Monday for the first of 3:08:10 p.m. Eastern time first pitch. It is going to be Darius Vines making the start on Monday for the Braves. And then Ronaldo Lopez and Max Fried will follow on Tuesday and Wednesday. And the Braves are off on Thursday. But they're hoping to bring home another series win. And from an Astros club that's off to a bit of a slow start this year. So we'll see if Atlanta is able to maybe take advantage of that while that club is down. That's going to bring us to the end of this edition of From the Diamond. As always, I appreciate you riding along with me throughout the course of this two-hour extravaganza of Braves and Baseball Talk. I want to say thanks to Dale Murphy for making some time for me this week to tell us a cool story about the Power Alley and stickball posters, and Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer for talking about all those pitcher injuries as well. Appreciate them, as well as Matt Olson, AJ Minter, making some time for me at the ballpark this week. Look forward to talking to all of you again soon. You can get From the Diamond wherever you get your podcast. Just search for it there. And I will catch you next week right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game for another edition of From the Diamond. Until then, I'm Grant McCauley. So long, everyone.